Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome leading owner Maggie Moss to Racetrackers. Good evening, Maggie.
Hi, Bill. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, we're so pleased to have you on. For any racing fan, you don't, there's no introduction needed, but as tradition goes, we'll do it anyway. Maggie Moss has been the leading owner in North America for many, many years. Since the year 2000, you've had over 8,200 starts with 2,200 winners, astounding 59% in the money rate, 26% win rate, and you've made most of the 48 plus million dollars worth of purse money with horses who you've picked up through the claiming box or bred yourself. And so it's our delight to have you with us.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it a lot.
I mean, you've been the nation's leading owner in 2006, and you've led many, many meets over the time being, but over those years, rather. But right now, you've just concluded a leading meet at Churchill Downs, their spring meet with 11 winners, and that's the fourth time you've led that racetracks meet. So that must have been an exciting time for you.
Well, Bill, I quit chasing titles quite a long time ago once I got into just racehorses and rescue and where horses go. So I really wasn't meaning to chase any titles, but I went to the University of Kentucky, grew up in Iowa, but went to school in Kentucky. And to me, Churchill Downs was always, you know, the epitome for me. I just always marveled over Churchill. So as we got closer, and it was in reach, I found myself unusually excited, really excited with the shot of being leading on a Churchill. That track means a great deal to me.
Well, clearly it's among the probably the best known racetrack in North America. But and as you said, Kentucky is the center of which the racing world revolves in this country. It must be heartwarming too for all the people who you employ who work so hard at putting out the best horse they can.
I back in 2007, Bill, I, you know, was kind of chasing a national title. No woman had done it, and I probably had 9, 11, 12 trainers coast to coast. And I think it was, you know, in the years after that, I recognized that I learned a lot about thoroughbreds and where they go and, you know, became astutely aware of how important it was to take care of them. So I sort of quit chasing titles. And as time went on, you know, I reduced quite a bit in horses. I probably had 70 back then, and I've been reducing every year. I actually don't breed any horses at all. I buy yearlings or two-year-olds. I still privately purchase and I still claim horses, but as Churchill, as I said, I just wasn't chasing titles anymore. And when it became possible, you know, I thought maybe I can. Mr. Ramsey is a formidable opponent, and he had, you know, maybe 9 in to my 1. So I didn't make any reservations to go to Louisville. Okay.
Right. Well, it's wonderful when things come together. You've touched upon it a number of times. You've been an outspoken advocate that the game needs to have a more formal or a more comprehensive aftercare program for horses when they're done on the racetrack. And if you want to speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think we've made tremendous strides in one area. I think we have certainly made strides as far as money for purse and aftercare and places like thoroughbred retirement, new vocations. I think there's an awareness, and we're doing much better at being aware, and we have some fabulous retirement places. Where we're not making strides at all, in my opinion, is all the thoroughbreds that are going to slaughter, going to Mexico from kill pens throughout the country. I don't think the industry has made strides there, or frankly even wants to discuss it. So we obviously, as I said, I don't breed horses because I think we overbreed a lot of horses regionally, particularly in Louisiana, and we're sending way too many thoroughbreds to slaughter, and that's something that I'm pretty passionate about, knowing and dealing with this. And unfortunately, That's where we need the awareness from the racetracks, you know, more teeth in the anti-slaughter, more money from the industry, because we're not getting too far. We can, you know, buy them from the kill buyers and buy them from the auctions, but then we have to have somewhere to put them. So that's where we're kind of lacking in awareness and finances, and in my humble opinion, the industry recognizing and putting a stop to this, you know, truly barbaric, antiquated process, brutal ending for thoroughbred. So that's why I don't probably have as many horses. That's probably why I'm focusing my attention on that. It's something that's pretty near and dear to my heart.
Well, I know that, and you've been a fierce advocate and a public advocate at a, as you said, a matter that is not spoken about or is spoken about only fleetingly. I think those efforts have led to a lot of the partnerships having aftercare policies and programs to make sure that the horses that they do have during the race 2 days find a safe home. I guess it is a bit of a conundrum, though, right, to rescue horses from the kill buyers, because it sort of creates a product that otherwise wouldn't be there for the kill buyers. And I have
no use for kill buyers. I used to be a prosecutor, Bill, and you're a lawyer. You get that. I shut down a lot of puppy mills here in Iowa, and I was always an advocate as a chief prosecutor here, but I don't advocate extortion. I don't advocate fraud. I've been extorted myself by kill buyers. The word you used is perfect. It's a absolute cluster corn fed. You just, you know, we're trying to go to the auctions and outbid the kill buyers, but they've got a sweet deal going on, and I don't quite, nor can I get my hands around a government, law enforcement, or an industry that doesn't put all these, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're no different than people that sell kids to sex slaves. I don't have any use for kill buyers. Let me make that pretty clear.
Yeah, okay. I think you've made that clear. Well, clearly, and this is a topic we'd love to talk for a long time about. It's an important topic, but it is the fact that animals are involved and how the animals are treated and what their proper ending is. It is, I always say, is really an existential threat to a game that we all love. There's so much good about this game, but if there is one threat to it, it is the blind eye being turned to animals being mistreated either during their racing days or after, and it's something that the game really has to address sooner rather than later, in my opinion.
Well, Bill, let me reiterate: there are some incredible people in the business, breeders, big time farms. Just got off the phone this morning with Elliot Walden of Windstar. They just claimed an old stakes horse of theirs. So yes, we've made progress, but I think the industry should be really astutely aware that there, by the grace of God, is Ringling Brothers Circus. I mean, the public,
right?
You know, the public image of not taking care of our horses and what happens to them, particularly in Texas and Louisiana, it's a big red scar that is I'm very concerned about it. And that's probably why we don't talk about it that much. And we should be talking about it.
Right. I mean, all you have to see is SeaWorld, which now is an attraction without sea animals because
yeah.
people, you know, came to the conclusion that it wasn't right. So, well, I'd love to speak more about that at some point, but we really called to congratulate you.
I know.
On,
thank you. I would much rather talk about the Churchill Owners titles than the other passion. But, you know, I've always felt I wasn't cut out to be someone that owns racehorses, and I've always felt the karma was, you know, the giving and trying to help horses, and it's just rewarded me in ways I never ever knew. I said to someone this morning, I didn't quite understand why the Churchill title meant that much to me, because I really haven't been chasing titles, but it just did, though. It was one of the, I was really ecstatic about it. I was really proud, and I really wanted it. And that I have to say, that's not, you know, I run a business, so I'm more driven by, you know, profit and loss and doing the right thing. But I'm proud I did it with only you know, like 17 horses. And I'm really proud I didn't give any horses away or, you know, bring horses in or drop horses. I just ran my business like I always did. And I guess that's what I'm proud of.
No, of course. Well, there's no gimmicks involved. I want to talk a little bit about a beautiful filly you have who you and I corresponded with the first time I ever saw her, and that's the horse Big World.
Oh, God, that was you, Bill. God bless you. You know what? You really did recognize her long before anyone in New York. I just remembered that. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I went down to the paddock and you know, I saw her. The confirmation and the size and the demeanor that she had, and I, right away it was something that struck me as someone who was a horse who was talented and was going to get better as she got older and grew into herself, and she really has, and she managed to get a grade one for you this year.
Yeah, she's now a grade one winner, and we know those are hard, and you know she's more of what you know we're all trying to buy those kind of horses. And I do have to tell you, if I haven't told you before, I hired Patty Miller of EQB, and when she called me from August OBS, which I don't think exists anymore because no one wants to go to Florida in August, and told
right.
me I was going to have what I was going to have to pay for a custom for Carlos Louisiana bred. I swear I thought she'd been drinking. I thought she'd lost her mind, and frankly, I did know, like many people don't, who Custom for Carlos is because I'm from the Midwest in Oaklawn, and I thought she'd lost her mind. And she said she was going to be expensive, which nowadays isn't that expensive, but, you know, she took a picture of her on her cell phone and sent it to me. I still have it on my board here, and I said, okay, we're going to buy her.
Okay.
And that's what happened. Isn't that interesting? And she developed into just the most, you know, these gorgeous horses, but she's just got a presence about her, and that's amazing. I do remember you saw it. She hasn't disappointed. She's been the gift that just keeps giving. But that grade one, that was certainly, I don't even have any adjectives to describe what that was. You know, on one hand, it was such a blessing and such a reward, and then the other hand, I knew immediately, you know, the offers would start coming in as a broodmare because of that and her presence. So it's kind of a pointed edge in some ways, you know.
Right, right.
I don't like parting with my horses, okay?
Right, right. Now have you parted with her yet or no?
No, I still own her.
No.
I've turned
okay.
down, I have turned down some very generous offers.
Well,
I have.
Well, she'll find it. Good home. It's you know when she's done racing, it's funny when you follow the races every day. There are days that are mundane and sometimes, but there are those jewel days, as I say, that you know when you see something that just strikes your eye. And I think that was a middle of the week in Belmont, and it was a otherwise nondescript day. And as soon as I saw her, I knew she was something. And I didn't know you well enough, but I reached out to tell you that I thought she was something that was going to become really good. So,
well, let me at this time take the time to thank you. Because you have a heck of an eye, because she really, I really appreciate that. I don't obviously get to New York, but you're a good horseman, Bill. You got a good eye.
Well, thank you. We don't want to keep you too long, but we do want to speak about one other horse you had, Delaney, who was just a wonderful, wonderful sprinter, and he's retired now. But is he a horse that you claimed and became
yes.
what
yeah,
he was?
I do have to tell you a very, very short, really great Delaney story. I did claim Delaney, and he won quite a few graded races. And, you know, when I retired him, he was fine. He was eight, and there was nothing wrong with him. But the great story is, I got to be good friends with Meg Levy, L-E-V-Y, and her husband's father raced, I think back in New York, Smokelackin. And
okay.
So the family, Meg's husband's family owned Smokelackin, was a part owner of Smokelackin. So when it came time to retire Delaney, he was obviously the number one earner of Smokelackin, and he is retired at the Levy Farm in Lexington. Isn't that a great story?
Yeah, very nice. That's great. That is great. And again, he was, you know, well, you had so many horses. We could talk all day about it. And But again, we just really wanted to congratulate you. As you said, you'd set all sorts of records, but this one was kind of special, and I thought it was worth highlighting because sometimes things get lost with the bigger races that go on. So we just wanted to congratulate you on that.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it and the call and really all too kind words, but I will tell you it meant a great deal to me. And when you live in Des Moines, Iowa, Bill, you just have your own inner personality, personal satisfaction. You don't get a lot of, you know, outside recognition, which isn't important, but it sure is nice, really. Nice.
well, glad we helped. Well, you know, we're here each Thursday night, and I don't know if you've ever heard the show before, but we're here every Thursday night, and the replays are available all the time, and we certainly would love to have you back anytime you'd like to talk about any of your endeavors, and some night we'd even talk about your august legal victories.
It's too interesting woman and men's world, trial lawyer and horse racing. I don't know how that happened.
I try to put on my resume. My resume is a corporate attorney, and I've spent the whole year, but it's kind of hard to squeeze in there that I've seen every race run in New York for the last 40 years somehow.
Well, I got to a point, Bill, where I couldn't do both. I couldn't do them justice. I did some pretty big-time trial work, and my law partner said, you know, it's time for you to pick what you want to do. This isn't going well. Because, you know, you got your iPad out, you're watching racing, you've got the racing forum, and so I said goodbye to that high-intense trial practice, 4 years ago? So,
okay.
I'm still a lawyer, and I still represent a lot of rescues, but I don't miss that world, by the way.
Yeah, it's a high-pressured world. I don't think everybody knows how to heart. Well, the cases you took were particularly emotionally charged. You know,
I look back at it now. I don't even know how I did it. Frankly, I represented a woman that killed her baby before we talked about postpartum and was sitting in Oprah Winfrey's studio when 9/11 hit. So I look back and it's just kind of like, who was that girl? Who did those things?
Yeah, and why did she leave Des Moines for any reason, right?
Yeah, and if they think horse racing is tough or being an owner is tough, it kind of is a relief from the type of people or things I saw in life, quite frankly, as you know, Bill, as a lawyer.
Well, I do know, and you know, funny, people talk to me about this show, and when I do this, I don't have any broadcasting background at all, but people say, well, are you nervous doing the show? And I say, well, you know, I've been on conference calls where people are threatening to sue you, jail you, so fire you.
This is a piece of cake, isn't it?
Yeah, just talking about which horse runs faster and who might run faster next week is a little bit less harrowing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I sure would love to meet you someday in person, Bill. You've been great.
Well, thank you so much. We'll make a point of it.
Okay.
Maggie Morse, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.